Hello, everybody.
Welcome to Lukewarm Takes. My name is Daniel Lugo.
And my name is James Duden.
All right. So let's go ahead and I guess jump into it. We got a lot to talk about for just the NFL alone.
Yeah, we have quite the topic list today.
Yeah. So we can go ahead and start off with Wild Card Weekend. It was quite a wild weekend in just all the games. Patriots fell to the Titans. We went ahead and saw the Bills lose to the Texans in overtime. Saints lost again.
Yes.
Third year in a row that they've actually lost in the playoffs?
Yeah, it's good with me.
Another.
Any year they lose is great. Yeah, no, it was two huge upsets, right? With the Vikings and then the Patriots losing to the Titans. I mean, nobody could have saw that coming.
Well, what's funny is, and we've actually talked about this, I kind of did see the whole thing with the Titans actually beating the Patriots. And most of that is, you know, for the majority of the year, once the Patriots lost their larger offensive weapons, Antonio Brown, just because he was being AB, Josh Gordon, when he went down into the IR and right when he was about to come back, getting cut, there were no weapons for Tom Brady or the Patriots. So, you know, all the defense had to do was just lock up Julian Edelman, and who's he going to throw it to? Sanu was an actual pickup, but he hadn't been comfortable with the playbook yet.
And
Kelly Harry, the rookie, but again, he's a rookie. He still needs time to develop. So at that point, it just seemed like you keep Tom Brady off the field and you keep the defense there getting completely pounded by that run game from Tennessee. And what happened was pretty much what I thought was going to happen.
Yep, I would agree there. And it's not like they had a somewhat strong running game with Sony Michel. However, he hasn't really had the production of a typical running back. I think he had about 900 yards this year. And 7 touchdowns for rushing, no receiving touchdowns. Actually, he only had 12 receptions all year, if I'm not mistaken. So, quite low for a typical running back, especially compared to such as Ezekiel Elliott and Christian McCaffrey, where they have a lot more receptions, more rush attempts. So they're more of a factor in their team success, where New England has been traditionally a passing team and a receiving team. So, yeah, I have to agree. Without those receiving weapons, it's kind of hard to kind of carry that tradition of throwing. So all they have to do is shut down the running game, and you just kind of leave yourself stuck in the middle of the road then.
Yeah. So going back to Wild Card Weekend, let's go back and talk about your favorite thing that happened, Saints losing.
Yeah, that was great. And a lot of people, specifically the Saints, because they always complain when they get locked out or kicked out of the playoffs, rather. A lot of people will say, and with a good reason, the overtime rules should be adjusted, right? Because if you receive the coin toss, your probability of winning the game is exponentially greater than the other team, because it's, you know, the first team to score a touchdown wins. So the other team doesn't even get a chance. So the Vikings march right down the field and score a touchdown, and Drew Brees, you know, he probably would have done the same, and then it just kind of turns into a sudden death. But unfortunately, the NFL doesn't have the college football rules where, you know, everybody gets a chance to score. So if that first team scores a touchdown, then it's over, which, you know, it can be a little unfair.
But I will say that the rules now are actually more fair than they used to be. Before, it used to be, hey, you kick a field goal, game's over. It legitimately was a sudden death. Now, if Minnesota had scored or kicked the field goal, all, you know, Breeze and the Saints would have gotten the ball. They would have had an opportunity, and then they would have been going back and forth. If they had gone down and actually kicked another field goal, it would have been Vikings ball, and we went loss, rinse, repeat until someone actually misses or scores a touchdown.
Yeah. Yep. So. Absolutely. Yeah. No. It's. Yeah. I agree. There's definitely more fair. However, it could be better. I'm not talking about, six overtime games, like they have in college. I think the longest was, 9 overtimes. That might be a little overkill. I think, at least allow each team to score, you know, such as the field goals they have now, and then kind of do sudden death from there. The next team that scores wins.
And so, well, I was watching Get Up yesterday, and Pat McCaffrey actually made a surprisingly very good point in his idea of how to fix it. His idea was for overtime rules, it should be a 10-minute, it should be another 10-minute period or a 10-minute quarter. Just go ahead and give them 10 minutes, let them play. Everybody gets an opportunity. If it's tied after that, then yes, it goes into more sudden death rules.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I would absolutely agree there. And a couple of other wild card subjects here, the Bills and the Texans, that was kind of a toss up either way. Kind of good to see the Texans advance. It's been a long time since they've really been a factor. And I think with them getting J.J. Watt back, it's going to be pretty huge because they've definitely been lacking in the pass rush after losing Clowney earlier this year to the Seahawks.
So with the Bills, and I know we had a conversation about this before the weekend, you had felt that the Bills were going to potentially beat the Texans. But the Bills really did go ahead and play that game as mm-hmm. they've done the entire season. They started off the game very strong, like they did the season. They went 5-0 at the beginning of the season. They were the team that nobody really spoke about early on. They went ahead, they got up 16-0, and then all of a sudden it seems like with the regular season, they started making huge mistakes and forgetting how to play football. And yeah, that's what really ended up costing them their game.
I'd say I'm very used to that because, it's a common thing these days in the NFL, right? You play not to lose instead of playing to win. So a lot of teams will take their foot off the pedal. And problem with that is the team, the players, they lose chemistry. And then the other team, they start to get in rhythm. They score. And then now your team is out of rhythm. Their chemistry is all out of whack. And then the other team scores again. And all of a sudden, now you have a game that only one team is prepared for. So it's happened a lot. I've seen it a lot with my team, actually, which was always a huge concern of the previous coach, which I would say that's a good segue. We can start talking about some of these coaching changes that we have. Let's see.
So first one, let's just go ahead and go down from not most recent, but just from the earlier ones. So, of course, in Dallas, Jason Garrett is out. Some may say it's about time. And now, Mike McCarthy is in. McCarthy, of course, former coach of the Green Bay Packers, was let go last season, took all this season off, and is now. But apparently, from everything that Fox Sports and also ESPN's reporting, he went ahead and actually had football minds around him constantly, even watching all the games and actually still keeping up his IQ and actually improving on things. So
yeah, I've heard of that. And I heard that news too. I guess it's yet to be seen because he's always been a pretty conservative, older technique coach with his defensive background. But yeah, it'll be kind of cool to see what he can do with Dak and Zeke, right? Because I do think they're really good players. They just need a good coach. Jason Garrett was always a yes man to Jerry Jones, so he never really had a lot of power. He just kind of did what Jones said, and that was the end of it. So we'll kind of see how that dynamic changes with Mike McCarthy in that role now.
That part that you mentioned, just Garrett being a yes man, especially with Jerry Jones, that's going to be the hidden item. No one knows how well they're going to go ahead and work together. They don't know that it's going to be – it may be first season – Jerry gives him a little bit of leeway, just a longer leash to go ahead and get accustomed with the team. But the moment Jerry starts seeing mistakes, he's going to fall back into his old habits, which is he's going to get involved in stuff he has no business getting involved in.
Exactly. Yeah, and he's not really a football mind. He's just a very wealthy person that wants to be involved in his product. It makes sense. And on the NFC coast coaching, there's the longest tenured head coach in the NFC East now is Doug Peterson of the Eagles with only 4 years because now Washington has Rivera and the Giants just picked up Joe Judge from the Patriots.
With that part, Joe Judge, wide receiver coach, he was also the special teams coach for the Patriots. Apparently, Josh McDaniel was supposed to go ahead and do the interview and Joe Judge went first. And at that point, the Giants canceled the interview.
yeah, I believe that. And I do think the Joe Judge is kind of a weird thing because normally you don't go straight from I don't know, what, a wide receiver coach to a head coach. Usually you have to call some part of the game plan. I understand he did special teams too, but something such as offense and defense is just kind of rare to skip that step of going into that coordinator position. I'm kind of curious to see what's going to happen there with Joe Judge. And back to the other thing, Josh McDaniels, I kind of think teams are very wary of hiring him or even interviewing him after what happened with the Colts, what, last year, 2 years ago?
Yeah, a couple of years ago when he was on the plane headed down to Indianapolis to actually have the press conference and then turn the plane around.
Exactly, yeah, and that just kind of leaves a bad mark. And honestly, he's always worked under Belichick, and I think Belichick is the genius of that franchise. So you could probably put, you know, a number of coordinators under there, but Belichick is still in charge. He's going to try to make sure that everybody succeeds. So I think a lot of teams will do well under there. And I remember Josh McDaniels in Denver, right? And he didn't really have quite the same reputation then. So we'll see what happens with him in the future. See if any team wants to take a gamble and bring him in. But like I said, I don't know if he'll get hired on this round. I don't think he will. I think he'll stay with the Patriots for at least this year, and then we'll see if Tom Brady decides to stick around this year as well. I think next year might be his chance to move to another team.
And I think one of the things that, especially with Joe Judge, like we were talking about, coming from a coaching position, never went to a coordinator position, and now being the head coach, so he was this wide receiver and special teams coach going over to head coach, a lot of that in some cases has to do with who his mentors have been. He's been mentored under Bill Belichick now for the past close to 10 years. And prior to that, or actually over the past 10 years, has been mentored by Bill Belichick and Nick Saban.
Yeah.
So it may be, hey, let's go ahead and give this guy a shot. He's worked under some tremendous coaches. Let's see if any of that has now also bled into what he knows in terms of calling it and running an organization.
Now, that's slightly off topic. Sorry to interrupt, slightly off topic there, but I guess we can kind of see what happened with the Lions when they tried to take that gamble on a Bill Belichick prodigy. And now they're Patricia. Yeah, Patricia's not doing so hot since he's been there in the Lions.
And it's one of those where, especially with Patricia, you know, just following up with that, he's won nine games in two seasons. So it's one of those where he needs to win, you know, by October or November, or he'll be having turkey at home without the team. So,
yes, I do agree there. Yeah, and then a couple of other coaching changes that we have. We have the new Panthers coach, Matt Rhule. So there's a new ruler in town. Been waiting to use that one. he's another interesting hire, right? Because he's never coached in the NFL. He's coming straight from Baylor, where he's done a great job in turning that football program around, along with what he did at Temple. So it's going to be exciting to see if he can make that transition to the NFL the same way that he, you know, worked very successfully with Baylor and Temple. So I'm kind of excited to see that. It's kind of cool to see a fresh change in the coaching department, kind of breaking up the status quo. So we'll see how that plays out. He's offensive minded, but he also did a little bit of defense back in his day. So it's kind of cool to have an offensive minded coach with a defensive background.
It's always interesting to see a college coach come into the league. You know, when we had now his name is escaping me. He coached, I want to say it was Oregon, and then went to the Eagles.
Yes, Chip Kelly. Yeah.
So, you know, it's always interesting to see those dynamics. How they actually go ahead and bring their mindset, how the college coaching and the college mindset, football mindset, can be translated into the profession, the National Football League, and what parts of it do they adapt? You know, they, most of the times, they can't take the exact same playbook that they used in college and bring it over to the pros, because it's not going to work. But they will adapt they'll adapt their playbook, but they'll typically keep a lot of their coaching style since it's worked.
Yeah, absolutely. And Chip Kelly is a great example, right? He is an excellent head coach in college. What's his record? I think it's 53-24. And then in the NFL, he was much worse. There, his winning percentage was way under 500%. So it goes to show that, you know, the NFL is a completely different game than what you may be used to in college. The players are actually professional. You're not playing against weak teams. Everybody is good in the NFL, even if you're on the Browns. So like everybody's a superstar, right? It's a very elite group of athletes. So it's not just a college where you have a bunch of walk-ons that may have never even played before. So it's an interesting dynamic to kind of transition to. So yeah, I'm excited to see how these new coaching changes will shape up. We'll see how the rest of the week plays out. The rest of the hirings, we'll see if Jason Garrett gets to move into New York. I don't think it's a great idea to hire him as an offensive coordinator, but you know, if that's what the Giants are interested in, we'll kind of see.
It's interesting. I mean, just especially with the, you know, bringing Jason Garrett, who was just let go from the Cowboys, over to the Giants, they're within division. Maybe that's one of the reasons why they're looking at them, looking at Garrett to come in as the OC, since he, you know, he coached the Cowboys for so long. One thing is, and especially for first year head coaches, you know, I'll just look at Brian Flores down in Miami. You know, he went ahead, did his first year. Most people didn't expect him to win a single game, won a couple of them, which is actually good for his, you know, job security, at least for now.
Yeah, he won five games with a week of week team.
Exactly. And then, especially with players demanding trades, what, week two and week three, just because assumed that the team was going ahead and the players assumed the team was just going to go ahead and tank. But even he, who didn't have a winning season, it was his first year as a head coach, he cleaned house. Guys that he actually brought over from the Patriots organization, gone. He's gone ahead and, you know, getting brand new offensive coordinators. So it's interesting because even though Garrett may, let's say, you know, the Giants bring in Garrett as the offensive coordinator, doesn't mean it's going to be long-term. It could just be a short-term thing just to get Judge accustomed, you know, bring in someone who's been a head coach, has actually has that experience, bring him in to help out Judge to get his, get the foundation set under him for coaching. And then afterwards, he may be done after that, you know, first year.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we'll kind of see how that plays out. Yeah, he's definitely exceeded expectations, even though they were low. But that's never an issue to expectations. And to jump into our quick takes of the day, let's talk about Kyle Long. He's 31 years old, and he's called it quits. So that's kind of a curious decision. You know, most offensive linemen play at least until the mid-30s or even late 30s if they're decent. It's kind of rare to see him retire at 31, especially still playing at an elite level.
Well, I think for Kyle Long, and one of the main reasons that he went ahead and retired was the history of his injuries. Because he went ahead and missed, what, an entire season with just various injuries. So it may be similar to when Gronk went ahead and retired after last year. Gronk right now is 30 years old. I think there's a change in mindset for the players, you know, whereas, you know, hey, we have Brady who's playing into his 40s. He's 42 this year. There are other players, especially the ones that are in the trenches, let it be, you know, and the ones that get the big hits. So tight ends, wide receivers, even deep, you know, the offensive line, even some safeties and linebackers are looking at their future. They're going ahead and calling it quits after their second contract more because now they're financially, as long as they've handle their finances properly and haven't actually gone ahead and blown through their money early, like, you know, players in the past have. If they're smart with their money and they can go ahead and actually take that, you know, the income that they make and save it. I'll use Marshawn Lynch as the perfect example. He really never even, you know, cashed his checks. Actually, Gronk never cashed his checks. He was going ahead and doing everything based off his endorsements.
Yeah, it's a great idea. Mm-hmm.
So it's one where if you can go ahead and set yourself up, you're now going ahead and using the league as creating your, you know, your future. It's not, hey, I need to play this game until I can't walk anymore like it used to be because players weren't paid that much. Now it's, yes, these players are paid a lot of money. They'll go ahead, put their bodies on the line for 5 to 10 years and just say, okay, at this point, I'm done. I'm going to walk away. I'm going to do something else with my life. I have financial backing, so it's not like I need to come back. Yes, there's a part of them as athletes that are going to miss it. Gronk missed it. He's talked about that consistently, and that might be one of the reasons why he ended up doing and joining Fox Sports to do analysts, you know, to be an analyst. It's, he's still involved in it in some fashion, even though he knows, while he believes he can go ahead and actually be out on that field and he feels great, the moment he starts getting hit again, he's probably going to reconsider that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can't blame any player or rather anybody in their 20s, you know, that makes millions of dollars to, you know, kind of throw their future health away, you know, to make more. I mean, so most of these people they make more money in one season than many people do in their lifetime. So yeah, you know, like you said with Marshawn Lynch and Gronk, you know, just not even cashing those NFL checks, just waiting until you actually need the money is very smart advice. I mean, if I had the chance to work for a year, maybe 3 or 4 years and make, you know, what, 20 million or so. I mean, I know that's on the low side for some of these players, but even 20 million, you can live off that for the rest of your life. And then you can still be involved, you know, such as what you're saying with Gronk. You used to be an analyst like Tony Romo. You know, a lot of very successful players and even non-successful players have jumped into the analyst position, Jason Witten being one. But, you know, like I said, yeah, you can definitely still be involved in the game without risking your health and still be getting the paycheck, do what you love, or at least talk about what you love.
And that part that you just mentioned, focusing on health, is actually a perfect segue to Tua. And the main reason I bring that up is because, of course, he had his hip surgery. He's already had hip surgery. He's decided that he was going to enter the draft. He's leaving Alabama, going into the draft. And my thought is, you know, everybody at the beginning of the year was saying, tank for Tua, tank for Tua. How far does that hip injury, do you feel, have him slide? Because everybody was saying tank for Tua. So with that hip injury, I don't believe that he would be, of course, the first overall. Of course, I could be wrong. I'm not an actual, you know, I don't know all the analytics that people go into to actually make these decisions. I mean, would I still think he's probably going to be top 10? Someone's going to take a chance on him. Yes. But ultimately, is he going to still be top 10, or is he going, you know, because of his hip injury? Because before hip injury, he would have been top 3.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And what I'll say, I definitely think teams will still take a chance on Tua because he's been a great quarterback. However, you know, Joe Burrow has actually really come into his own over the last few games here. I think Joe Burrow actually be picked before Tua and potentially even Justin Herbert. One thing that concerns me about Justin Herbert, I guess, well, the situation is he's from Oregon. He kind of doesn't really have. I don't think he's going to translate well into the NFL. But I guess that's yet to be seen. But yeah, I'll definitely say Joe Burrow is probably going to lead the pack of quarterbacks drafted. I think Tua will definitely get drafted in the first round. I'd say within the first 10 picks, he's not going to be like Johnny Manziel and get drafted the next day after being highly sought after. But yeah, he's definitely going to get drafted. I know teams are going to be concerned about the hip injury. We had a few players with that injury that, you know, never really recovered. But he's still young. He can still recover from it. I think he'll be an excellent choice for a team that's really struggling at quarterback. And we have quite a lot of those.
Yep. And actually, just talking about that, CBS Sports did a mock draft, and they have the Cincinnati Bengals picking up Joe Burrow as the number one pick. And they have Tua being picked as number 5 for Miami.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah. I could definitely see that. Miami has had quite an issue with quarterbacks. Gosh, ever since Marino left us, it feels like. But yeah.
That is Cleveland.
But yeah, no, we'll see. I think it would do great in Cincinnati. I feel bad for Dalton because he's always showed a lot of promise, but he just can't get it together. to be successful long term or consistent. So yeah, I definitely think Joe Burrow would succeed or excel there in Cincinnati, and Tua in Miami. We'll see that plays out there.
Well, because if you look at it, if you know what Miami has, Devontae Parker, who really came, you know, within his, he really found his footing, even, you know, just working with that offense. I picked him up in our fantasy league, and he was very consistent in that time, and he may have been one of the reasons why the Dolphins actually had the ability to win games late in the season. He yep. was actually, he actually, you know, so if you actually put Tua into that equation, he may even go ahead and be a bigger threat moving into, you know, this coming season.
Yep, I absolutely agree. Yeah, it'll be kind of cool to see, you know, how this class of quarterbacks does. You know, the first year is not going to be a very, very good indicator at all. But we'll see how the years play out for these guys. I'm excited because we've had a couple of really excellent quarterbacks in the drafts these past few years, but also a great number of bombs of quarterbacks, specifically any quarterback drafted to the Cleveland Browns. But, you know, I mean, it happens. You know, like we were saying earlier, college doesn't necessarily translate to the NFL. If you're a superstar in college, you maybe just average in the NFL. I mean, you're playing against guys that are elite superstars, not just your ordinary walk-ons.
Yep. All right. So I guess one of the things that we got, I guess one of the big things we got to go ahead and talk about is, you know, when it comes to, especially this past weekend's the playoffs, elephant in the room. Where is Brady going to end up? Because now with wide receiver coach and also special teams coach gone, his potentially his offensive coordinator, Josh McDaniels, gone, you know, he's interviewing. He actually moved up all of his interviews the moment that the Patriots got eliminated from the playoffs. He has gone ahead and told the Patriots that he's not looking to give them a hometown discount, especially since he's been doing that close to the past 20 years with them anyways. My thought is he's going out west. His house in Boston is actually on the market. Why are you going to go ahead and sell your house if you're going to go ahead and stay with the team? Is my thought.
Yeah.
And the way he was talking after the games almost sounded like he was like, I'm out.
Yeah, not only is his house on the market, they actually recently cut the price. $8 million, I believe, was the number. So it was originally, I think, listed around 40 to 50 million. They've actually cut it down a whole lot. Almost like they're in a move to sell the house and potentially, I don't know if Tom Brady will actually, if he doesn't stay with the Patriots, I think he may retire. I mean, he's already cemented his legacy, you know, and won all of his awards. I don't think the Patriots will be much of a factor, even with Tom Brady next year, unless there's some massive overchanges on the offensive side. So I don't know if I see Tom Brady playing for another team this year, but we'll see what happens. I just think that that his age is catching up to him. He has not looked the same these past couple of years, even with the win in the Super Bowl. But I'm excited to see what happens to him. It's been great to live in an era with all of the great quarterbacks, such as, you know, Aaron Rodgers, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Drew Brees. Yeah, it's probably the the golden age of quarterbacks in the NFL. It's kind of cool to see how these veteran quarterbacks are mingling with the young dynamic quarterbacks like Lamar Jackson and Russell Wilson. It's kind of cool to see the transitions here. But back to Tom Brady, I don't quite see him playing for any other team next year. I think he's going to play for the Patriots or he's going to retire on the top.
And what's funny is that was pretty much the two options that Kraft had mentioned. He's like, you know, of course, option A is play for the Patriots and option B is retire. And my thought was, okay, so owner of the team that's had him on since they drafted him feels that those should be, you know, yes, Brady has earned the right to do whatever he wants, but even the owner feels that those would be the best two options. And it may be, you know, the similar reasoning, because look at what happened with Montana when he left the Niners and went to the Chiefs. he went ahead. He didn't. He wasn't the same at that point. It's, do you want to go to another team and have more declining years, or is this more of the fact that you want to, from a statistics standpoint and from a record standpoint, there's nothing really left for him to prove. The only thing that, you know, he may feel he needs to prove is his winning was not because of Belichick.
Yeah, and that's something to consider as well. I mean, Tom is a great quarterback, but Belichick's probably the greatest coach of all time, right? So to have a great quarterback and the greatest coach of all time, now you'll have a great quarterback, or even, well, at his current age and status, probably above
he's average. He's a good quarterback.
Good above average quarterback going to play for who knows, right? I know you mentioned the West teams, but most of the good West teams have a great quarterback already, or at least, you know, they have their franchise quarterback. So he potentially would go to a team that doesn't have a good quarterback, probably doesn't have a stable coaching situation. Or so if he does go to another team, it'll be kind of, I think it'll really open the eyes to see whether Belichick was the reason Tom Brady was so successful, or was Tom Brady actually really good. I mean, it's
or Brady was the reason that Belichick was so successful.
Well, I don't know. Belichick did go he did go what, 2008?
Yeah, with Matt Castle when they went 10-6.
10-6, yeah. So yeah,
and also the first four games when Brady was suspended and they split time with Jacoby and also Garoppolo. So between those two and actually going 3-1, hey, it could have been worse. They could have gone 0-4 between the
two. Absolutely.
They were still in flow. They were able to go ahead and win games while Brady was coming back.
Yeah, I'm kind of excited to see how this is going to play out.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but that's actually one other thing that I meant to ask in terms of Brady even going back to the Patriots. Does the forthcoming punishment from the league have anything to do with him possibly leaving? Because the league is going to come down. It's reported that they are going to punish the team. If that equates to fines, more lost picks, his offense was already depleted this year. If you take away picks, you know, for this coming draft, they can't, you know, unless they're going ahead and opening up the wallet and signing receivers and anyone else from free agency, they're still going to have the same offense and have the same struggles.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll see if it was a declining Brady that was impacting the offense, or if it was it was personnel. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how the 2020 season plays out. I definitely think it's one of the more interesting seasons in past times, or at least the recency bias. So, but on to other sports. Just a quick touch on before we end our podcast here. Some of our NHL, NBA teams. I don't want to leave those guys out.
And actually, before we get into the hot teams, one thing that I do want to bring up is, as it, just for Major League Baseball, there's during the investigation, I guess, when with the league going after the Astros abusing their dugout and also the various audible signs to audible sounds to steal signs, it's being reported that the Red Sox used the replay room to steal signs.
Oh man, yes, I did read that this morning. That's it's crazy, you know. Anything to get the competitive advantage and hope you don't get caught, I guess. And that's what the Patriots have been doing too, right? They're not doing anything necessarily illegal, just frowned upon, or, you know, slightly teetering the line rather. And you know, same with the Red Sox and the Astros. I don't think the Red Sox had the talent. Maybe not necessarily in 2018. Well, I guess they had to have some level of talent to win, but they've had the talents. I don't think necessarily cheating per se is something they needed to do to be successful there. So it really sucks when you have a great team, and then, you know, that legacy is tainted with accusations of cheating.
Yeah, and from the report, one of the things, you know, while one Red Sox source described, you know, what the Athletic had reported as cheating, It's interesting because they're saying this only happened during the regular season. And the main reason that they could say that it only occurred during the regular season is because Major League Baseball had an in-person monitor stationed in all video replay rooms during the playoffs. So there was almost Big Brother from Major League Baseball sitting in all of those rooms. So it prevented the Red Sox from doing what they had been doing for the majority of the regular season.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep, I do agree there. Yeah, it's kind of interesting to see how it's gonna all play out too. With them, I mean, ultimately they did win the championship or the World Series. So they will always have that banner hanging up. But yeah, I mean, we'll see what teams do in the future. Now they know, you know, teams are getting caught more often, you know, doing these types of things. Should they be more conservative in their approach, aka not try to get that competitive edge, but teetering on the lines there, or you know, or teams? I do think teams will still take the risk, you know, because sometimes the reward is greater than, you know, the risk. So yeah. you gotta take a chance sometimes.
Yeah, that's true. All right, so hopping over to hockey. Sounded like you actually had something to go ahead and talk about.
Oh man, yeah, hockey's been kind of interesting this year. I was looking at the standings in the last few, the top 10 teams. You know, a few of the top teams have had a very bad streak over the last 10, 15 games. The Bruins are top place in the whole conference, or the whole league, sorry. And their last 10 games, they have 4 wins, 1 loss, and 5 overtime losses. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. And then we have a couple of teams on the lower end of the spectrum, right? On the bottom of the standings that have very good records over the last 10 games, such as the Chicago Blackhawks. They are 7-3 over their last 10 games. I mean, they're really on the improve there. So it's going to be exciting to see how the bottom teams in the NHL play out. And if the Bruins and the Islanders keep falling, and even the Colorado Avalanche, they're kind of in the same situation. You know, they're a top 10 team, but they have not looked so sharp over the last few weeks. So will that have an effect? As you know, because the playoffs are coming up soon, the Stanley Cup Final. So how is everything going to shape up in a couple of months or so when that happens?
Yeah, and end of the season is April 4th, so we are almost 3 months away from the season ending. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, as you mentioned, hey, Blackhawks, if they go ahead and just continue on the path that they are, 7-3 their last 10 games, if they continue that pace, you know, will they jump from 7th and Central even higher so they can actually make the playoffs?
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. I still think my favorite right now is going to be the Lightning, even though they're not at the top of the standings at all. They're probably I think they're still within the top 10, but they're going to be my favorite. They've had an excellent past few weeks.
They're on a 7-game win streak.
Oh man. Yeah, they are. They're on a winning streak right now, and we'll see, because they're going to be playing again soon, and I guess anything can happen, but I don't see them breaking stride right now.
All right. And now let's go ahead and switch over to basketball. I haven't been keeping much tabs on pretty much anything but football lately. I've just been going ahead and trying to read up on most stories as they've been coming out. But
this may be old news, but I've been waiting to talk about this for a while. Specifically for Hornets, call me a fanboy. But with Kimba leaving earlier this year to the Bruins, I thought the Hornets were going to be.
To the Celtics, you said Bruins.
I'm thinking about Boston. Yes, Celtics. Sorry. But to Kimba leaving, I thought the Hornets would struggle to win any games this year, especially with the roster they have. I mean, they don't necessarily have many superstars, if any. But Devontae Graham has really come into his own. No one ever expected Devontae to be as good as he's been over the past few months. He's really stepping up his play this year, and you know, he's actually in conversations to be on the All-Star team. So I'm kind of excited to see how that plays out. It's his second year in the league. I believe it's the second year in the league, and And nobody knew his name last year, unless you were a college fan. But, you know, nobody really knew his name. He was kind of a Kemba shadow last year, getting a few minutes off the bench each game. But this year he's really shown that he can hang out and play. And then also another player that can really hang out and play is Luka. Second year, already in talks to be an MVP. He's really turning the Dallas. He's really turning the Mavericks around.
Yeah, Mavericks right now, currently in sixth. They're six games behind the Lakers. And interesting, the fact that they're, you know, just using the fact that they're behind the Lakers. Earlier, there were conversations on GetUp on ESPN, and the conversation around Luka came up, and if Luka was going to be better than, you know, LeBron. And one of the analysts made mention of, well, within the next 10 years, Luka is going to be dominating this league. In many ways, I agree. It's not necessarily the fact that he's going to be better than LeBron. I don't believe it. You know, LeBron is his own. But ultimately, the reason I say that is, sooner or later, LeBron's going to retire. He's not going to be in the league. And yes,
yeah. Just like Brady.
Well,
yeah,
exactly. Well, just like Brady, just like, you know, Jordan before, Kobe, everyone at some point retires. So it just opens up the door for someone else to step up and actually be that dominant player. I mean, yes, we have the Greek Freak. We have Joel Embiid. There are a lot of players right now, but from the crop of young talent, Luka so far is the one that is showing those flashes of greatness.
Yep, and back to your earlier segment about some of these older players, you know, you can beat other teams, but unfortunately you cannot beat Father Time. He'll eventually catch you. Now, some people, it happens a lot later. I mean, Adam Vinatieri was still playing. He was, what, 45, 46? I mean, so it goes to show, you know, if you're a good athlete and you have a lot of luck on your side, then you can play well into over half of your life. But yeah, no, I think Luka, I do agree. I think he's going to be I think Luka's going to be quite the cornerstone of the Mavericks and even the NBA over the next 10 years. He's definitely going to be that guy. I mean, he's had an excellent year. I don't think it's going to be interesting to see how his career plays out compared to Dirk. Especially with the Mavericks, you know, will he overtake Dirk as the fan favorite of the franchise?
And the other thing is, will he, like Dirk and some other players before, go ahead and be team friendly in the case of their contracts so that they can actually stay with the same team and have a long career with a single team? Or once, you know, his contract's up and he hits free agency, will he just go free agent?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I think it's too soon to predict that because it's going to depend on a number of factors, right? Do they look like they could, you know, make a push? And right now, yeah, I think they can make a push this year to be in the playoffs. But by the time his contract is up, does the coaching situation look good? Does the talent around him look good? Or is he going to be stuck on a bottom team, like similar to the Hawks, right? I mean, and even the Warriors, which is very surprising to see how they've fallen off over the past few years. They've only won 9 games this year and lost 29. Coming off what? Within the last 5 years, they won more than any other team. So it's going to be interesting to see what Luka does. I think it's going to depend on the talent around him and the team and if they're ready to compete for a championship or if they're still just building out. Or rebuilding rather their franchise. So it'll be interesting to see. And speaking of NBA, what are your thoughts on the Jazz? They've won 9 games out of the last 10. So they're coming on strong.
Yeah. And it's always good to see the Jazz because the Jazz it's not necessarily that they've had bad teams. It's just, they've had unfortunate situations on that team. And what I mean by that is just, they will play very well, but then, you know, potentially lose at last, or they'll get bit by the injury bug. You know, basically what happens to a lot of teams over the course of several seasons. The fact that they're hitting stride now, like you mentioned, they've won, you said 9 games?
Yep, 9 out of the last 10. Yep.
Okay, so they won 9 out of the last 10. It's getting them into a groove. If they can go ahead and continue, if they can build off of that success, and if they can build off that success, they are going ahead and also increasing their morale by doing so. It honestly should be one of those where they should be able, they should be able to make a push to get into the playoffs. If the, depending on who they're facing, they may actually hit a wall and just possibly miss. But at this point, if the season were to end, they'd be in fifth. So as long as they continue, and just stay within the top eight, they should be able to get into the playoffs and possibly make a good run.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree there. And speaking of playoffs, let's jump into our last segment today. The lukewarm takes, quick picks, quite the name. But basically, let's kind of just pick who's going to win this weekend in the NFL playoffs.
All right, so divisional round, we have Ravens versus Titans.
Yeah, Ravens versus Titans. I think Ravens are going to win. Unfortunately, the Titans had a huge upset last week, but the Ravens are a much better team than the Patriots this year. So
Agreed.
I think the Titans are going to take that.
Just even with, just swapping Brady for Lamar Jackson, absolutely agree. Ravens are definitely a more dangerous team. It's going to be one of those where can the Ravens defense stop Derrick Henry? If he gets moving, and it's possible that it's, I don't think this game is going to be a blowout. I think if the defense cannot contain the run game for the Titans and also prevent the Titans from getting comfortable with play action, it's going to potentially be a one score game.
Yeah,
In
I can
favor of
see
the
that.
Ravens. It's not going to go ahead and be super, it's not going to be multiple scores game. But if the Ravens defense can stop, the run game and actually, force Ryan Tannehill to have to pass where they cannot rely on Derrick Henry, that game's going to get out of hand really fast.
Oh, absolutely. And then that brings us to our next game, the Texans and the Chiefs. Who do you have?
This one's, I started off making my picks with the Chiefs. Again, it's one of those, especially because the game's in Arrowhead. Arrowhead is a monster place to go for any team to go into, just even during the regular season. Playoffs, it's going to be a madhouse. It's going to get loud. It's going to disrupt that Texans offense. I'm still sticking with the Chiefs. I think I can probably pick Chiefs by 10.
Okay, yeah, I can see that. I mean, the Chiefs, they're if you shut down Patrick Mahomes, then you'll probably have a good time because I'm not sure if Damian Williams is going to be back for this one. LeSean McCoy is kind of looking like a shell of his former self. So if you shut down Mahomes, then yeah, I think they'll have a great chance to win. And then our
And then on the
next.
NFC, we got Niners Vikings.
Yes. Same with